KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
On To the Point, we try to make sense of the policy debates and the political sideshows on the campaign trail.
Donald Trump is probably the most significant thing to happen to the religious right in a few decades.
OMG, this guy is actually a bigot.
If she becomes president, no one since Richard Nixon would have been on the national stage that long and won the White House.
I'm Warren Olney. To the Point has you covered for the 2016 campaign. Find the To the Point podcast on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
I swear to you, on all I hold holy, which is nothing really, but you know what I mean, that I did not leak this, because honestly, the last thing they want to do is make a film with a filmmaker that is untrustworthy.
Director Tim Miller says he wasn't the one who leaked game-changing test footage of Ryan Reynolds as the trash-talking superhero Deadpool, and he doesn't know who did. But that leak created a sensation on the internet, and the movie finally got made after being stalled at Fox for years. Miller and producer Simon Kinberg tell us how Deadpool went from dead in the water to box office record breaker. But first on the news banter, Hollywood in flux, upheaval at Fox and Viacom. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my partner in banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
Whoa. So we have news breaking as we speak, as we're recording, and it's like Hollywood decided to go completely berserk, starting out with the news that Fox is changing the guard. This is something that was really not anticipated in the town at all. Stacey Snyder had come over to Fox. She had been at DreamWorks, and before that, she had been the chairman of the Universal Film Studio. Successfully at Universal, much less successfully at DreamWorks. She got to Fox 18 months ago. Fox was in the midst of an incredible role with movies like The Martian and Deadpool and Gone Girl, not in that order. And everybody thought that Jim Giannopoulos, the chairman of Fox, and Emma Watts, the head of production, were in a very safe and secure position, and that Stacey Snyder had come in and had been hired there, but really had no portfolio or a real base of power. And it seemed, up until about 5 minutes before we're talking now, that she was kind of adrift there without, a real job that anybody understood and in the industry or within the realm of the studio. And then comes news that Jim Giannopoulos is being promoted up into the sky, and no word on Emma Watts, but Stacey Snyder will become the chairman of the Fox studio.
I think the takeaway here is that this is really further proof that the Fox Films group, the television group, everything at Fox is still a product of the Murdoch family. And this is clearly something that the Murdochs wanted. Rupert Murdoch was responsible for bringing Stacey Snyder over to the studio, giving her a co-chairman title. And this is the Murdochs saying, okay, this is the future. We would like her to be running the company.
Yeah. And so what I am hearing from my sources is that, you know, Rupert obviously recently married Jerry Hall, had handed the reins, hypothetically at least, to his sons, James and Lachlan. I hear that Stacey Snyder managed to plead her case. She possibly had been promised this some time ago, but maybe pleaded that she was being put in an awkward situation, especially with Lachlan Murdoch. And I hear also that the Murdoch sons are respectful of their father's wishes, and he is the one who initially brought Stacey Snyder in. There was a pause. You know, the deal broke. We actually broke news of that deal well before Stacey Snyder could get out of her contract at DreamWorks. So months passed while she was sort of stranded at DreamWorks, which at that point was kind of struggling. And meanwhile, Jim Giannopoulos and Emma Watts were off on a tear. And by the time she got there, it seemed like the moment had passed, but clearly the moment had not passed.
Right. And now the fallout. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out at Fox, because there are a number of people there that arguably could have a claim to that top job, most notably Emma Watts, who has been in charge of production there and has been responsible for, you know, the X-Men franchise and the Planet of the Apes franchise, and got a lot of the credit for Deadpool being what it was earlier this year. you know, she was passed over for Stacey Snyder. And, you know, is there going to be a domino effect there?
Yeah, well, I think that's a great question. And, you know, today our guests are the director and producer, one of the producers of Deadpool, and they allude to Emma Watts's role in, you know, that is definitely a movie she got a ton of credit for. It's a funny thing, too. How is this going to play in the town? Because unfortunately for Stacey Snyder, you know, her best moments were not at DreamWorks, and nothing happened at Fox that suddenly turned around the perception that things were not going so well for her. And, it, you know, it unsettles the community when people like Jim Giannopoulos and Emma Watts do what is agreed to be a very, very strong job. And then in comes Stacey Snyder. And I think people are, you know, they'll obviously want to do business. There aren't that many buyers in the town. And Stacey will have the ability to write a check and greenlight a movie. But I think there's just a sense of unease at an unstable time in this business, saying, how is it possible to do really good work and then suddenly the rug is pulled right out from underneath you?
Well, also the other studios may see an opportunity to poach a very, very qualified and recently successful executive.
Yes, that is possible. There are very few jobs at that level. Let me pivot to Viacom. That battle continues. In recent days, Sumner Redstone and or, you know, with his daughter, Shari, although it's always attributed to Sumner Redstone, who is 93 years old and very frail. Sumner Redstone sacked several board members. And I assume that even though this hasn't happened as we speak, it is about to happen. They sacked Philippe Domon as a member of the board of directors, along with several others, including Frederic Salerno, who had been very much on the team of Philippe Domon, the chairman and CEO. Well, he's not the chairman of the board anymore, according to Sumner Redstone and his lawyers. I gather this is part of the takeover. Sumner Redstone has been reasserting himself. He has replaced, as we have talked about in the past, Philippe Domon on the trust that will control both Viacom and CBS. And Viacom, of course, is Paramount Pictures, MTV, Nickelodeon, Comedy Central, a bunch of properties. So he has been gradually tightening the noose on Philippe Domon and now has tried to remove him from the board, presumably removing him also as CEO. And Philippe Domon, I guess, is arguing that this cannot be done.
Right. There's a dispute now as to whether National Amusement, the parent company, can even remove all of these people from the board. And that's what's going to be litigated in court. Philippe Domon is challenging the ability of the parent company to interfere with the board and ultimately with him. But the takeaway from this is yet another move by Shari Redstone in conjunction with her father or on behalf of her father, depending on who you believe, to drastically change the makeup of Viacom and install people that are friendly towards her. And this will ultimately, if it's not overturned by the court, lead to a new CEO of Viacom, new leadership, possibly a combination of CBS and Viacom. And ultimately, many believe the consolidation of power under Leslie Moonves, who runs CBS.
Yes, I think the argument for Domon is that Shari Redstone is doing this on behalf of herself. However, as we say, this is always being framed as Sumner's move. And, you know, CBS and Viacom were one company in the past. A lot of people on Wall Street have clamored for them to be recombined.
Especially if Moonves is involved, because he's one of the most admired and respected media executives. You know, people have talked about whether Sumner Redstone is alert, whether he's orchestrating things. You had a nice scoop this past week where Sumner actually visited CBS and Paramount, so he's at least out and about and cognizant.
Although he did not get out of his van. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, executive editor of The Hollywood Reporter. Among the many superhero movies that studios have cranked out in recent years, Deadpool stands alone for its raunch and its R rating. Ryan Reynolds plays the foul-mouthed Marvel character bent on revenge. He's not afraid to break the rules or the fourth wall.
You're probably thinking, this was a superhero movie, but that guy in the suit just turned that other guy into a kebab. Surprise! This is a different kind of superhero story. To tell it right, we gotta take you back before I squeeze this ass into spandex.
Deadpool is packed with sex, violence, and humor. Fox released it in February, not usually a time when studios open popcorn movies. Yet Deadpool broke record after record, becoming the highest-grossing movie for President's Day weekend and the number two rated R movie ever, behind only The Passion of the Christ. Today we talked to Tim Miller, the director of Deadpool, and Simon Kinberg, who has written and produced several X-Men movies, as well as action films Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Jumper, and Sherlock Holmes. Before Miller made his directing debut with Deadpool, he established himself as a visual artist. In 1995, he co-founded the animation and design company Blur Studio.
You know, the mission was kind of doing anything that looks interesting to us visually. I mean, the whole reason for me to start a business was because as an artist, I thought I'm going to have a better chance of liking what I work on if I have the control of picking the jobs. And as long as I can make rent every month, I'd rather work on something creative than just, you know, make money doing flying logos. So we do a lot of game cinematics. They're the high-end sort of marketing pieces for games. We do a lot of that.
So the origin story.
Got to do it.
Got to do it. The character of Deadpool appeared in 2009 X-Men Origins Wolverine. And it was going to be a movie, right? I mean, Simon, were you involved at that point?
No, I wasn't involved at that point.
Nobody here was involved.
Neither of us were involved in that iteration of Deadpool.
I would say that Ryan would say he wasn't involved in that, in that movie.
Was Ryan that Deadpool?
He was.
Oh,
yeah. And he's still scarred.
Well, what happened? Was the character like blech, or was it subsequent stuff that turned it into a problem?
No, the character was pretty blech. I mean, Ryan would say that too. They a character who's known for being a motor mouth and fast talking, wisecracking.
Oh, yes.
They actually like sewed his mouth shut.
Yeah, I remember you're bringing that.
And
back
he just
now,
had
yeah.
like X-rays that came out of his eyes, and it wasn't the best use of the character, let's say. And the fans were unhappy about it. And the plan was always to turn it into a movie, but that wasn't the most auspicious start for it.
I think that sometimes there's a little bit of hubris in the system about we know better than comic books because they're this childish medium and we can do better because we're Hollywood. I never felt that. And I think that was a case of that where somebody said, hey, wouldn't it be cool? They didn't know the character. They didn't understand his origin and particularly why people like a certain character. And the last thing you would want to do is sew the guy's mouth shut. I mean, he's literally the Merc with the mouth.
That's what he does. He talks. Yeah, a lot. So you get into it.
Well, Ryan really believed in the character. I think started to work with it was Ryan, and then he started working with Paul Wernick and Rhett Reese writers on the script. They spent years working on it, and then Tim got involved, and then you can take it from there.
Yeah. What was your entree into this craziness?
Drew Crivello was an exec who had charge of the project, and Ryan and Paul and Rhett had kind of worked on it and gotten was the best script I'd ever read, which leaked. So.
The script
had leaked, and it had gotten very wide approval from the fans because it's a great script. And so that had come around, and Drew Crivello was working on another movie, X-Men First Class.
I did work on, actually.
Yeah.
Drew, I was
Enter
producer
Simon.
That. Yeah.
And he had seen one of those game cinematic things I mentioned for DC Universe, and it was a big superhero battle. And he tracked me down from seeing that on the web and said, clearly you understand action and superhero action in particular, and would you help design some action for X-Men First Class? And I said, yeah, sure, I'd love to help. And then as we talked more, he said, you know, I actually think I could get you on a smaller film directing if you're interested in this thing called Deadpool. And I said, oh, I think I am interested in that, yeah.
A whole lot? What year are we in?
2008, okay. Maybe, 2009, okay. Something like that.
Uh-huh.
It's been about 6 years, I think. But I'm not the best with dates. So anyway, so then I got involved and we did a new draft of the script. I met Ryan, got his approval, met the writers, met
so
Lawrence
Ryan, even though this thing had sort of not worked in the first instance, was ready to circle back because of the new script? Is that basically how it was?
Well, I would say that Ryan would say that he really did the first incarnation of Deadpool so that he could do a movie about Deadpool and do it the way he thought it should be done. And I think that was the promise that
so he really
you know,
was
Fox
a true
made.
Believer in this from the jump.
Oh, yeah. And he knew, I think, his vision for what the character is the character that we put on screen. You know what I mean? So it wasn't like he ever bought into what was done before. He just said, okay, I got to go through. I got to eat this sandwich and then I'm going to.
And then I'm going to get the
yummy then I'm going to get the chance to make it right.
So the script is there. You've got your movie star, and he's hot at that point in terms of
yes,
he's like giant on the rise star. What is the problem
in terms of why don't they make the movie?
Yeah, why don't they make the movie?
I wasn't around for it, but from what I would imagine and what I've heard, It was a really ballsy movie to make. It's a R-rated.
It was the same kind of tenor.
Yeah. It was a really unique tone.
It was the same movie.
Yeah. Super unique tone, R-rated, unlike anything else in the superhero genre. Scary movie for a major studio to make.
And nobody wants to do an R movie of this nature.
They did not before, no.
Until now, I was going to, yeah. Valid point. But at that time, it was meant to be family entertainment, PG-13.
Yeah, or at the very most, or the youngest, you know, sort of 15, 16-year-old boys. Mm. So, you know, kids that are still not of age to buy an R-rated ticket.
Right.
But to answer what I think your question was, it was always R. That even that incarnation then, I just think that that's the way the writers intended it to be. That's the way Ryan intended it to be. I just don't think the studio was ready to make that
right.
R-rated movie at that time.
And this, I will just mention, since it will come up in a short minute, Tom Rothman was at that time essentially running the film studio. And, you know, he had very specific ideas about what he wanted to do and what he didn't want to do. And apparently he had a lot of hesitation on this one.
But you know what I'll say also, interestingly, I think that in some ways at that time, I'm not sure that audiences would have been as ready for it as they are now, because there wasn't the same kind of surfeit or saturation of superhero movies in the
right.
in the culture. And now this movie came out, I think, at a time when people felt like they were ready. They were so fluent
right.
in sort of
had
the paradigm
it happened
and the
then,
genre.
They would have been a little baffled.
They would have
by
been
the
a little baffled. I don't know that it would have spread as wide as it did, or people would have felt as sort of in on the joke as they feel now.
I don't know about that. I mean, it certainly helped, especially with the fourth wall breaking moments, but I wanted to make the movie just as much 6 years later as I did at the beginning, because I thought it was a good story and I thought the character was interesting.
You were right.
I thought yeah, but I wouldn't say that I sat there and said, oh, it's going to be a giant success. It's going to be massive. I just thought,
right.
oh, this is a movie I'd like to see. This is good. I like this character. I like the story. And so I think it still would have worked. Would it have worked on the same level? That I don't know. But,
right.
I don't know. Who was on the other side? If Tom Rothman was hesitating, who was saying, let's give Tim the money?
I don't know how Tom felt about it before, like in the past. Like when I was hired, I didn't interview with Tom. I interviewed with Drew and Lauren, the producers, and they said, look, the only way we're going to make this movie is for a price that was, you know, fairly low. And so I had to do a budget that meant that. I had to show concepts that felt interesting. And then I did a test because I'd sort of proposed a way of making the film that's not revolutionary now but was more revolutionary then, which was a lot of all CG shots. And so they said, we haven't seen that. Prove that it could work. So they gave me a little money to do a test, which is the test that leaked.
That is the test. Definitely.
But then, hold on. So then I turned the test in. We turned a budget in that hit their magic number. And then Tom said, you know, I don't think it's a good idea to make it now. And then everybody walks quickly away.
Yes. I mean, at the studio.
Yeah.
Because Tom.
We didn't.
Tom is he's at Sony now. He runs Sony Pictures. And he's a fiscally very, very prudent guy. Risk is not his favorite thing, I would say, generally.
But is it for anybody? I mean, really, I have a lot of sympathy for. It's easy to sit there and rail against people that maybe don't see something that you think you see. But honestly, everybody thinks they're a genius, right? Everybody thinks they're a filmmaker or fit. I've got the great idea and nobody else will see it. But who knows? It's such a...
I know. It's true. But having said that,
yeah.
Tom is a conservative guy. I'll say it.
Yeah.
You guys don't have to agree.
Yeah.
He's a conservative. He's a careful guy, right?
I'll just say there was certainly no rage at that you didn't understand. It was more just like, I don't agree with you. But he was always respectful about
and
it.
And you always, but you had in the test footage, the final thing is
hi, Tom. Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds' character, Deadpool, says, hi, Tom, at the very end.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, look, I would pester them for every month for the next 5 years. And they were always very respectful. Tim, love your passion. Love how much you love this movie.
Love your passion is like, those are bad words in Hollywood, aren't they?
Well, you know, it's better than, you know, piss off.
Right.
So,
it's actually probably a variation
it's a version
on piss
of it. Yeah,
off.
It's the euphemism for piss off.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'll take, if it's hypocrisy, I'd prefer it to,
right.
you
to
the
be
alternate.
Nicely boy. Lowered
exactly,
to, as opposed
yeah.
to drop.
Better than not answering emails. I'll say that.
Coming up after a short break, Tim Miller and Simon Kinberg talk about the leak that launched Deadpool. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Playing with fire. Listen to KCRW's music stream, Eclectic 24, for hand-picked music around the clock. And you can find all of KCRW's produced content on our app. Download for free at kcrw.com/apps.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to director Tim Miller and producer Simon Kinberg about their superhero super hit, Deadpool, now available on Blu-ray and DVD. The film stars Ryan Reynolds as Wade Wilson, a wisecracking mercenary who, facing a fatal illness, puts his trust in an evil scientist. Transformed into a far stronger but much less handsome man, Wilson becomes Deadpool and goes on a quest for revenge, all while mocking some well-worn superhero tropes.
So you're going to do a superhero landing. Wait for it. Woo! Superhero landing.
Yeah, that's really hard on your knees.
Totally impractical. They all do it.
Ryan Reynolds is in many ways the champion of the film. He was committed to a standalone Deadpool movie since portraying the character in another X-Men movie in 2009. But Reynolds' career cooled off after he starred in the disastrous Green Lantern movie. Deadpool looked kind of dead at Fox, but director Tim Miller did get the chance to shoot some test footage, a long action sequence with snappy banter from Deadpool and lots of CG effects. Finally, someone leaked that footage online. There were those who suspected Miller, and fans began to clamor for the movie. The rest is history. And there's a lot of chatter about who leaked the footage.
Yes.
I think you've denied this.
I have, and I will continue to deny it.
he says with a smile.
I hastily wrote Jim an email,
Jim Giannopoulos, ahead of Fox,
and said,
yeah,
I swear to you, on all I hold holy, which is nothing really, but do you know what I mean? That I did not leak this because, honestly, the last thing they want to do is make a film with a filmmaker that is untrustworthy.
But somebody did.
They did. Somebody leaked it.
Ryan said he's 70% sure it wasn't him.
Look, we had every version of what if we just drove down the 405 with our trunk open and boxes of DVDs in there, that kind of thing. What if we, do you know anybody in China that could upload it, that it couldn't be traced back? But ultimately, I felt like it would prove me untrustworthy, so I couldn't do it.
Right.
But the link was around town, and agents had the link. People at Fox had the link. You know, various director friends of the studio had the link to this piece. So,
I mean, you could say to someone, I would never leak that. But boy, if someone did, you could do that, right?
I could. But it took me completely by surprise. And I was literally getting home from Comic-Con. I just got off the train and my phone blows up. And I see all these, dude, oh my God, it's online. And I was horrified. My stomach just dropped because I thought, oh my God, they're going to be so angry.
And
they weren't. They believed me. Fancy that.
Okay, the leak happens, and then what?
Then a couple of things happened all at once. The best thing is everybody liked it, and I think everybody could see that we had a vision for the character that would be popular, and we didn't have to prove that. It was verifiable internet evidence that that would happen. We had also started talking to Simon because Simon's one of the gatekeepers at Fox of all the Marvel franchises, and
he's a big one.
He is the one.
And I actually got involved in Deadpool because the writers, Paul and Rhett, actually wrote me an email right around the time, right after it leaked, I think. And that email said, Deadpool needs your ass, was the title of it. And then in the email, ass continued into the word assistance.
Writers.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
We thought, you know, you make it for a responsible amount of money and it makes a profit. We didn't think it would be more successful than the mainline X-Men movies. We just thought it would actually make a profit. And the other part of it that was sort of my plea to them, I guess, when I got involved was it made Fox seem cool. It made the notion of what they were doing with the comic book franchises they own sort of badass in a way that separated them from some of the others. And it was an opportunity, I thought, to sort of identity or brand build and make some money doing it.
But the best thing about the test, I think, aside from the initial push was once we actually got to shoot the movie, it really was, look, everybody loved this tone. Let us keep doing it. If we hadn't done that and if it hadn't been so well accepted, then we would have continually be asked the question of, is this the right thing to do? Should we push it this much? And even the jabs at Fox, you'd think, but it never happened. But they never said, hey, that's a cheap shot, or hey, don't do that.
Well,
or,
I was going to say with the jabs at the industry and Fox, it's like, you know, well, this is all we can afford. This is the only character we can do. I mean, how much truth was there in that?
I think it was all true. And Fox knew it, and that was the beauty, was they were fine with it. And I think it's because, look, they're all really nice people, and they have a sense of humor, and it made them laugh, even if some of it was at their expense. But I think Simon said, and it's very true, it did make them cool. I mean, as a fan, I was proud of them for doing that because, you know, you look at some of those other things that in the hubris I mentioned, and this was a way of atoning for that past mistake in a way that says, hey, we up and we're willing to, you know, let the
we're
world
correcting the yeah. course here.
Yeah.
So directing it, was it all you had wanted it to be?
I mean, I didn't know the technical side of filmmaking. I had an idea what I wanted, but luckily being older, I'm not worried about my perception. So I had no problem walking on set and saying, listen, I don't understand this process. I've never done it before. So if I'm doing something stupid, tell me. If I'm doing something wrong, let me know. And everybody sort of chips in and helps you in a great way. So I had a trailer, but I never saw it. I talked to the actors. I was always running out. And even when I didn't have to talk to the actors, I want to talk to the actors because I like them all. And it was fun. And we were having a good time. And I think a lot of stuff that comes up just because I'm sitting there and not going back to my trailer or whatever, I didn't take my phone out except to look at the time. You know, I didn't check my email when I'm set. I'm there to answer questions. I'm there to be of use to the crew. I know it seems like a stupid small thing, but it makes a big difference at the end of the day because people aren't guessing what you want, or they feel like they can ask questions instead of having to present something finished. And it's just it's a better process for everybody.
So here's Tim. He's sounding so reasonable, Simon. And yet we invited Tim to come on the show. He said yes. And then the studio said, well, why? What about Tim and Simon? So what was the issue there?
I don't know that there was an issue.
Clearly there was.
I don't know. We've done a bunch of interviews
Tim,
together.
What do you think it was? not to put you on the spot, but I have to ask.
I have a reputation for not watching my mouth and
God bless
and
you.
Speaking my mind.
But it hasn't hurt the movie. I mean, like, the reason why I think there isn't an issue truly is because, like, whenever you speak your mind or you swear or whatever you do, it feels like it's in the voice and the tone of the movie. It'd be one thing if this was like we were doing press or an interview for Cinderella. But we're not. We're doing it for a raunchy R-rated superhero movie, and we've done a bunch together, and you've done a bunch on your own too.
But I didn't do any press for the movie. A few, but not
I kept
much.
Old and, Tim under a
yeah. And to be fair, I mean, look, 99.9% of the people, if you want to talk about Deadpool, they want to talk to Ryan, and that's the way it should be. You
and
know?
Yet we're so different here at KCRW.
You are. You are. You're charting new path. But I think maybe it's that
they were a little nervous.
Yeah,
you might say something bad.
Yeah. I would say they don't know what I'm going to say, so they don't
That's
know.
Awesome. We love that. As Tim knows, this was a bit of a drama. But let's move on. I guess I'm wondering about Deadpool 2 is a thing, right?
It's a thing.
I'm trying to figure out what crazier you could do. I'm baffled by that.
Yeah, because honestly, there was only a couple of things that they said no to, and they weren't big ones.
There were things they said no to?
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, it didn't involve certain types of sex that are not conventionally represented in movies.
Yeah, but that was the single most rewritten scene in the entire movie. And if you read the earlier drafts,
oh, God.
Yeah, it involved a lot of costumes, I'll just say that.
Okay.
So imagine Ryan Reynolds in a chick outfit, a yellow chick outfit, and it's Easter. you know, as much as you want to say the movie was different and new and fresh, I feel like we do have a tone and an approach that worked, and I'm sort of loath to say, yeah, well, now let's go all Dark Knight on this. You know,
that would be a mistake. I'm just amateur here, but I can tell you.
I think so. Yeah. But you'd be surprised that that's not immediately off the table because there is this thing where you don't want to repeat yourself. But I feel like there's so much ground to cover in the tone that we found. I wanted to do something for the hardcore fans like me, but I really tried hard to appeal to everyone. And that feels like the magic trick to me.
Tim Miller is the director of Deadpool, and Simon Kinberg is the producer. Thank you guys for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can hear The Business on demand with the KCRW smartphone app and get the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.